Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Be Unique Unscripted, because an authentic life is unscripted. Presented by Bronner House Museum, Eliza Kaler, the spiritual therapist, and Little Green Oasis. Unscripted brings you amazing guests and open mic nights every Thursday night at 9 o'clock Eastern Time. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an opportunity to learn more. Visit our calendar on beunique.org to see who we have scheduled to appear next. That's beunique.org.
Welcome, 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 everybody. I am Mary Brotherton, your host on Unscripted, and I'm here with my co-host, Gene Albertson. Hi, Gene.
Howdy, howdy. How you doing?
I'm good. Hey, it's been such a, it's been a great day so far. I'm excited because, you know, anytime we have a special show in the early afternoon, that usually means we're dealing with someone from a different time zone. And boy, oh boy, is Scotland a long way from Florida. We are here today with Graham Reike, and he's a leading nonprofit consultant with 30 years of experience in the UK public and voluntary sectors. He's based in Scotland with a business called Wren and Graham, which I can't wait to talk about. He specializes in helping nonprofit organizations devise long-term strategies and plans for sustainability and success for their organizations. He's an expert at helping others find their way through complex challenges related to survival and growth. Welcome, welcome to the show. Oh, I almost forgot. He's also the author of Making a Lasting Difference. But welcome to the show, Graham.
Thank you for having me. Lovely to be here.
So glad to share a little bit of the Florida sunshine with you, a little virtually.
Yes, send it our way. We need it. Thank you.
It's getting chilly over everywhere. I really wanted to ask you a question about, you said that one of the common challenges for nonprofits is that they say yes too often.
You picked up on that?
Yes, I did. And as a nonprofit leader who does indeed say yes too often, how do I stop?
Good question. And I think I've got the easy job as a consultant because I get to sit on the outside. And part of what I'm trying to do, I'll explain more about yes and no and the paradox with sustainability. But part of what I'm trying to do is to give people permission and reminders and instruction as far as possible to say no sometimes to the things that their organizations need, but which, if they have too many of them, their organizations will become unwell, and perhaps those things will be fatal to the organizations. If it's okay to keep going, Mary?
Absolutely.
I think about it like sugar and salt in the human body. There's things that nonprofits need, things like referrals and funding and partnerships, new ideas. But if we have too much sugar and salt in the body, we become unwell and we might die. And likewise, if our organizations have the wrong kind of funding or too many referrals, if we say yes to everything, sometimes for very good reasons, likewise, we won't be able to sustain ourselves. It won't be healthy for us.
Wait a minute. I have to interrupt because I'm really curious. How can you have the wrong kind of funding?
good question.
Isn't money good no matter where it comes from?
Well, I'm hoping from the way you're asking that question that you know that there's good money and bad money. Certainly not all money is good money. If it comes with unrealistic expectations, perhaps. So if your donors perhaps want you to reach out in new directions into areas of work you're less familiar with, or perhaps they want to add the burden of reporting on some additional outcomes or impacts. And so you've got an extra burden of evaluation that comes with it. There can be money that comes with different expectations. Sometimes there's free money, and we like free money, don't we? But there's very little free money. There's usually some expectation comes with it. So,
exactly.
Yeah.
We were recently awarded a grant, a small one, and had to attend a workshop to discuss receiving the funds. And that's when we found out that it's not actually a grant, it's reimbursement. And there are a lot of strings attached to it. And I'm thinking, is this really even worth it?
Yes. That's a good way of thinking. I've not thought of it that way before. They're not grants because I don't think there's a single grant that isn't actually reimbursement, because it comes with the expectation of money being spent and quite clear definitions being put around what it's spent on.
Well, we were very fortunate. We did receive a grant that was literally free money. But unfortunately, it was because of COVID, and we applied for it and had to fill out a lot of information, a lot of P&Ls and things of that nature. And, you know, the financial sheet was a nightmare because they wanted us to project what we, you know, they tell us what you did last year, tell us what you've done up to this point now, and tell us what you think you might be doing next year, as well as what do you think you missed out on. So we did get a decent amount, but it was absolutely just no strings attached. Here's some money for organizational use. That was very handy, but those are very far and few between.
Yes. So if we get things that are relatively unrestricted, and so we can then choose to invest or spend them as we see fit, then yes, that's a dream. And the trick is to try and salt that away or to invest it wisely, so that you can be more sustainable in the future. Because I think the other aspect of the taking the money, that there being a wrong kind of money, is people often think in terms of revenue rather than contribution to their overhead. So we will end up thinking that any money is good money if we think in terms of revenue, because it's all money that goes onto the profit and loss statement. But lots of contracts, lots of grants, lots of funds don't actually fully reimburse the actual costs of delivering what's being asked for. And the end result of that is bankruptcy and unsustainability, isn't it?
We don't want that.
And yet we seem to want that money. We pull ourselves out of shape chasing it. We lose our way in terms of our missions and our purpose when we go chasing that. So in the book,
exactly.
I use the challenge that money follows good work rather than the other way around.
I like the way you think, because that's exactly in line with my thinking. You know, you can spend a way too much time, start, you know, like you said, filling out grant applications is not an easy thing. And then when you get the grant and you've got all this other paperwork you've got to fill out as well, then where do you get to do the fun part of why you started the organization in the first place?
Your actual work. It's a tricky one, isn't it? And your donors and funders don't want to put extra burden and expectation on you, but at the same time, they've got their checks that they have to do, and they have to be assured. Increasingly, funders are interested in finding sustainable organizations, ones that will be a safe bet. So it's a balance, isn't it, of giving them what they need, but not being pulled off shape or losing your way or letting the mission creep set in. It's a tricky balance, isn't it, for nonprofit managers? This is complex stuff for anyone.
It is.
We're talking here about managing a business, but also managing values and purpose and mission. There's a whole lot more on top.
Now, your business is as a consultant?
That's right.
So how did you come up with the name Wren and Greyhound? I've got to know the answer to that.
We used to have a frequently asked question page on the website, and it was the only question that we had there, because it's the only question we get asked. I'll tell you the honest story. I later had to come up with business-like lies to try and justify, along the lines of maybe the fox and the hedgehog, that kind of thing, that there's different ways of being. But the honest story is that when my wife and I got married 20-plus years ago, her name is Jennifer, and so her nickname, she's known in her family, as Wren. I think you have Jenny Wren in America.
Yeah.
So her name's always been Wren. And when we got married, we went and visited, traveled around the country visiting my in-laws. And as we were leaving the house of who at the time was my 3-year-old nephew and is now my 24-year-old nephew, he said, "Goodbye, Wren. Goodbye, and he couldn't say my name, Graham. It came out as Greyhound. So ever since then, that's our nickname.
That's awesome.
That's a great story.
Well, but then the business became a bit successful, and it became really embarrassing to try and explain to people why we have this name. So, like I say, I've subsequently made up some lies to justify it, but people like hearing the real story anyway.
No, I think the true story is the better story. It makes you more, I don't want to say the word human, because you are obviously human, but it makes you more relatable.
Well,
you have a backstory that's got it's an interesting, cute little story.
Well, and it makes us sound a bit like a pub, but
it makes you sound, like I said, more relatable, but it makes you sound fun. And I personally like to work with people who are fun to work with. I don't want to ever work with someone who's stuffy, and I mean, too much business is not good for business, actually, in my world.
I think that's another great expression. I'm learning a lot tonight, Mary. This is fantastic. I completely agree. too much business is not good business. Absolutely. Totally agree.
Feel free to quote me.
Thank you. I think if you're running, the other side of that is different with a non-profit, I think, because of there's so many external challenges and stakeholder expectations that we've been talking about. But if you're running your own consultancy and you're not enjoying your work, then it's your own fault. You're getting it wrong. So, that was a challenge after doing this I've been doing this part-time for 14, 15 years and full-time for 8 years. But after 4 years in any job, I've had enough and I want to move on. So the challenge in this current job was and I think the only job I'll ever now have is to make sure that it stays interesting and it stays fresh and it stays creative and fun. So you've read that much into me from the company name alone.
Yeah, I love it. And, you know, it's so funny because it sounds exactly like Gene's parting words. Usually on every show, we ask for parting words. And go ahead and do yours now, Gene. Get them out of the way.
Well, a man after my own heart, I believe very strongly that if you're not having fun, you're not doing it right.
Absolutely.
You can figure out some way to do it, definitely, and have fun, whatever it is.
Well, it's true, because what we do, there's a lot of gravity and seriousness to the work that you do when you've got a mission and purpose in life or as an organization. But you can carry that lightly, and you can still have gravitas and take issues seriously and be taken seriously. But we're human beings working with human beings, aren't we?
Yes, yes.
Definitely.
Well, I'm going to take a real quick break, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to talk a little bit about, I'm not sure yet what we're going to talk about. I may come up with something else in 50 seconds.
I might try and answer your previous question.
Okay.
If you like the show tonight, let us know. Call 321-417-4309 or email mary@beunique.org to ask how you can sponsor the show. It's simple and doesn't have to cost much at all. Visit beunique.org for even more details. That's BUNEKE.org. Join the global world changers who already know how Be Unique helps bring together like-minded humans who are making the world a better place. Read the magazine and blog posts, watch our videos, listen to our podcast, and visit our social media from one location, and let's work together. Change tomorrow by finding solutions today. Visit BeUnique.org to learn more. That's BUNEKE.org.
Welcome back. I am talking with, I just had a brain lapse. I'm talking with Graham Reiki, and I've got people in my little corner, my little craft area. They're working hard behind me, and I just keep on to be with them. Anyway, Graham is talking with us about his book, which is called Making a Lasting Difference, and it's geared toward how to keep nonprofits sustainable, resilient, and relevant. And I think that's important. You know, it's good to be sustainable, and definitely in the nonprofit sector in the UK or anywhere in the world, you have to be resilient. But I think relevancy is key. You know, how do you make sure that what you're doing is relevant to what the world needs?
And it's, and you're completely right to link that to the issue of sustainability, because one of the key messages in the book is that sustainability doesn't mean sustained, because things change and needs change, situations change, communities change, and if we don't change with them, then we'll become irrelevant and we'll be left behind, because we'll be meeting a need that no longer exists or serving a community that no longer exists. So absolutely, that issue of relevance is very important, and we talk in the book about the paradox of change and that sustainability actually requires us not to try and preserve the status quo or to protect and preserve our organizations. That's putting things backwards, back to front. But instead to focus on exactly what you said, staying relevant, making sure, because we don't have a right to exist. We only have a right to exist if we're meeting real need, if we're meeting needs relevantly and giving people what they want from us, what they need.
And I know that in the UK, there are over 167,000 nonprofit organizations. I don't even know. I know that because I prepared for this, but I don't know how many are in the United States, probably at least three times that much. And it blows my mind how people will recreate an organization that doesn't need to be recreated.
Yes.
I think this is probably most frequent in the animal welfare department. People say, oh, I'm going to start a nonprofit organization to XYZ these precious little animals, either a sanctuary or rescue, but there are other rescue organizations out there that they might could serve better by working with them.
Exactly. That's one of the things I think is really important to always consider is working with another nonprofit and using your own particular skills or advantages to help each other for sustainability, definitely.
That's an interesting one, Gene. I think I'm hesitating because I try to be quite cautious about this one, because there's a definite element of truth in what you're saying about duplication of effort and therefore waste of resources. At the same time, I think that the voluntary sector nonprofits are sometimes unfairly held to a different set of standards to the commercial sector. And we've heard so much in the last 30, 40 years about the role of competition and the role of markets and choice, and I wonder why the voluntary sector should be any different. Why would competition and choice be a healthy thing amongst businesses, but not for charities? But I do definitely get the point about duplication of effort. And in the book, it seemed a bit. I had to think long and hard in the book when I was talking about there's five sustainability capabilities, and one of them is involvement. And typically we would think of involvement as being the participation of our communities and patrons and people that we serve. And I had to think hard about making partnership an equal weighting alongside participation. But Jean, because of what you said, I think partnership with other organizations, other nonprofits, is a really vital element to our sustainability. And it's something that probably makes us slightly different from the commercial world.
Sure.
And, you know, it's interesting, when I first told my sister that I had already started a nonprofit organization, she looked at me completely aghast and she said, how are you going to make money? I said, the same way I'd make money with it as a for-profit organization. You work hard. and that's, you know, there are different, of course, you know, there are different avenues with for-profit and nonprofit, but it's you know, a charity is still a business, and a lot of people forget that, I think.
Yes. Yeah, well, there's an awful lot of aspects to what you're saying. But yes, absolutely. I think that's something that people often don't really understand, particularly if we use the expression voluntary sector, which is really common here in the UK, because people think that voluntary means amateur.
Yes. And that is one thing that we pride ourselves on at Be Unique, is we have a lot of professionals and some absolute experts in their field working with us. And because of that, we've been able to do a lot of things in a short amount of time that other organizations haven't been able to do. and Jean can testify to that, because that's how I came across him, was we were working with another nonprofit. And I met Jean, and now he's working with us as well.
Yes, it's a mistake to think that all of the best and brightest people work for your organization. We need to be open. When I was saying that it's different in the nonprofit sector, when I began researching sustainability, I was doing my MBA at the time, and the management literature would say that you become sustainable by developing assets and then exploit them before other people do. But I think in the nonprofit world, our sustainability comes from being part of a more open system and being open to the environment and exchanging with the environment. And like you've said, making the most of our resources with people who are of a similar mind with similar goals.
Mm-hmm.
Very different.
Exactly.
I should say it's a dark December night here in Scotland, and you might start hearing the rain in the background. I'm in a garden room in my garden at night here, and the rain is now starting to pitter patter off my zinc roof, so you might hear that in the background. I'll try and stay muted.
Well, that'll be great background music.
Yeah.
Well, tell me if it gets distracting. Yeah, it's a bit like being in a tent when you hear it off the roof. But apologies if that gets distracting.
We'll let you know. Not nearly as distracting as you trying to log in. And did you log in from your computer? Were you able to do that?
Yes, I made it here. But yes, it was slightly later than I would have liked. So apologies for the nervousness.
No problem. The bottom line is you got here.
And then the first thing that I did was I'm conscious I evaded or didn't answer your first question, which was how to say no. And that's something I'm always looking for examples. And I'd love to hear any examples you've got of how you go about saying no to those tempting treats, those partnerships or opportunities that come along, but it's not quite the right time or not quite the right partner. Because I'm always looking to answer clients' questions. How do we do this? And a couple of tips that I've learned is one client who says, well, I don't say no, but I don't say now. And I quite like that distinction.
Ah, I like that.
Yeah, I think there's something quite neat about
that. And that's kind of Be Unique is really not even 3 years old yet. So we're still learning as we go. But because of what we do find that we have to say not now sometimes. And we do a lot of documentaries for people. And we do, of course, the magazine and the articles, but there are times that we just don't have enough manpower or, human power, whatever the correct word is these days. We don't have enough people to do what needs to be done the way others are wanting it done. So we have to manage their expectations, I think.
And that's, carry on.
Yeah, I think managing someone's expectations is difficult because you don't always know what their expectations are.
Right.
And one of the easiest mistakes any business or nonprofit can make is to neglect its existing partners and funders and donors while it goes in the pursuit of the new. So, yeah, that's a difficult balance. You need to be looking after and managing the expectations of your existing stakeholders, don't you, before you then go looking for new ones or taking new ones on.
Mm-hmm. Because especially I think for a foundling organization, you need to be mindful that the people who are with you from the beginning will be with you through the end or the non-end, actually. You don't want your charity to ever end, but they will be with you through the hard times and the good times as long as you let them know how much you appreciate what little bit or what great bit they may have been able to do for you. I think the biggest mistake any nonprofit leader can do is to distance themselves from their supporters.
Yes, and I think if there was, we've had Jean's parting shot, I might give you mine just now. The most useful thing I've ever learned about sustainability is to think about the question, who does your work belong to? And obviously there's no answer to that question, but in exploring the question, what it means for you, I think you become more sustainable. Who does your work belong to?
Mm-hmm. And if you think it belongs to you, I think you may be in the wrong business.
Yes. And that's tricky for you as a founder. I think that founders can sometimes struggle in nonprofits as much as elsewhere to let go of those, you know, those strings sometimes, and to find the right opportunity to develop the processes and the systems and to equip people around you to step in and to take over. That's a challenge. We don't talk about so much in the book, but we've developed a free companion guide. We've got a Lasting Difference Toolkit, which is a free 50-page PDF. And in February, we launched Lasting Leadership, which is a free companion guide to sustainable leadership. And a big part of that is about what we're talking about here, succession planning, staff empowerment, and so on.
I downloaded that, and I'm working my way through it. I'm glad you brought that up, because they're both very valuable tools. And because they're free, it would do any leader or any volunteer even, it would do them well, I think, to go through it and read it and work through the workbook.
That's good to hear, and tell us. We're always looking for feedback, so people can, if it's okay to tell Mary, people where they can get those. That's from thelastingdifference.com.
Absolutely.
And yes, we really welcome feedback, particularly from partners overseas, because the Lasting Difference Toolkit, we know that there's more than 7,000 nonprofits around the world who use it. We know that there's people on every continent apart from, we don't have any in Latin America or in Antarctica, probably not surprisingly. But we don't get a great deal of feedback, and I'm always keen to know how relevant people find it. So we're probably coming up to another break shortly, but I'd love to hear whether you think it needs any translation for a North American audience.
Sure.
Well, I can tell you, I didn't find any need for translation for me. I may not be the common denominator, though. But you're right.
You're my focus
time
group
for
of one, Mary.
Quick break. Pardon?
You're my focus group of one. 100% of people in North America said it doesn't need any adaptation.
Hey, sometimes that's all you need. Let me do take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Learn why people around the world listen to Be Unique Radio. Join host Anna East on her exciting new podcast, Here I Am, live every other Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, where she embraces the changes of the world and within, bringing you back to who you really are. Become a sponsor or be a guest and put your message in front of our growing global audience. Guests are booking months in advance, so don't delay. Join the show live after 8 p.m. Or you can send Anna an email at annaeastax@gmail.com for details. Great show, great perspective.
Welcome back. We are talking with Graham Reakey in Scotland, and we're talking about his book, The Lasting Difference, and his workbooks. Forgot exactly what they're called. The Lasting Difference for Leaders is one. What was the other one, Graham?
We've got Lasting Difference, which focuses on organizations, and Lasting Leadership, which focuses on leadership.
Yeah.
And I've got some Scottish rain for you. I don't know if you can hear it, but it's definitely arrived now.
Okay, well, this is definitely a first for me. I've never heard Scottish rain before. So I'm not sure I'm hearing it yet, but I feel like I'm just getting the coolness of it.
Yeah. So I have fulfilled that stereotype. I quite want to keep answering your original question, which we've not quite got to yet, about saying no. Can we just quickly come back to that? Because I loved your answer to that, Mary.
Yeah, please.
And we'd said that one answer to how can we say no to those things that can be attractive. We want to help people. Sometimes we're worried, what if some other organization takes this on and then we miss the opportunity? So we've mentioned about saying not now. And I think the other, maybe more positive way to reframe it is to think about the things that you say yes to instead. Because in your answer, Mary, what you said is because you want to say yes to quality, that sometimes means saying no to this other opportunity that comes along. Or because you want to say yes to writing an article, that will mean saying no to doing a podcast, for instance. So it's about working out what our yeses are.
And that's important to know what you need to say yes to. You have to have a clear focus and be clear in where you want your organization to go.
There we are. There's my third nugget from you, Mary. That's fantastic. What do we need to say yes to, and what would we just like to say yes to? And there's a difference between those, because there's some things we really can't get away with saying no to.
And you had asked me before the break to be your focus group of one. And I will tell you that one thing that I do enjoy about your workbook is the self-assessment scoring. You know, that makes you stop. And I'm never really great at on a scale of 1 to 5 or on a scale of 1 to 6. I always think, even when I go to a doctor, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, how bad is it? Well, if it wasn't bad, dude, I wouldn't be here. But but I tend to not know if I'm over scoring or underscoring. Because, you know, the scales aren't always easy for me to figure out, okay, well, is 6 like really, really great, or is 6 really, really bad, or am I? And I tend to sometimes just hit 3 all the way down, you know, go right down the middle and see where it lands me.
That's what rulers are for, isn't it? You just get your ruler out and you just go right down the middle. Our scoring system's it's a bit meaner, isn't it, Mary, the scoring system that you've been using?
Pardon me?
The scoring system in the Lasting Difference workbook, it's a bit tougher, isn't it?
It is a little tougher. And it's very helpful because it makes you think. And in fact, I'll just read one that under self-assessment with the income generation that I found very thought-provoking. Our approach to raising our profile is consistent with our core purpose and the impact we want to make for our communities. And I think sometimes, especially if you've got a board that may not understand what your core purpose is, you have to then share this with them and make sure that everybody understands where you are. In fact, I had a situation a while back with my board saying they couldn't find our mission on our website. It was everywhere. They just didn't know what it was.
Right. There's a lot about unity of vision and clarity of purpose that's threaded throughout the indicators. So you mentioned the scoring system. So just for listeners, the reason we're talking about this being an unusual scoring system is it's 0, 1, and 2. 2 means that you have clear, convincing, consistent evidence of meeting the indicator. 0 is that you don't, and 1 is that it's mixed or partial. So there's no half scores possible within that scoring system.
Right.
I wasn't sure about it until a client, there's a lovely film case study on thelastingdifference.com where a woman called Isabel Lawson from a charity called Stepping Stones for Families. And in this film, she says, don't change the scoring system. It makes you realize that if something isn't evident to you, it's not evident, like you said, Mary, it's not evident to your board or to your donors or your volunteers. So there's no half scores with it.
Yeah, it really, when I had a board member say, I can't find our mission statement anywhere online, and I'm thinking it's everywhere, because it was everywhere, but we never actually wrote mission statement, or this is our mission.
Yes.
And we kind of were treating it a little more artistically, which is fine, but you also need to think in terms of the people that aren't so artistically inclined, and you need to make it where it's easy to see for everybody. And I think it's that way with every aspect of the culture of any nonprofit or any business that you have to think in terms of, I guess it would be the lowest common denominator.
I think the trap that we can fall into with nonprofits is thinking that it's self-evidently a good thing that we exist.
Right. The founders especially may know, and even the board may know why you exist. But if you can't make that clear to other people, then you're doomed.
Exactly, because we tend to know it in our hearts, but if we can't articulate it in our lips and in our, you know, the way we communicate, we have a major problem. So the thinking behind the indicator that you've quoted there is to not be too diffident and to not assume that people know the value of your work. If we're going to raise our profile, which every nonprofit wants to do, then we need to be confident enough and to use the second part of the indicator you read out, which is that you've got a mission to achieve, you have a purpose. You need to honor that by being brave enough to tell people about it, to sell it, to describe it.
Right, right. You have to be able to recite your elevator pitch, if it were. You know, you have to be able to very precisely and concisely explain who you are to absolute strangers.
Yes,
so that when they walk away, they know within 30 seconds, oh, I get it.
Yes, absolutely. And for what it's worth, the tip that I would give nonprofits on this one is don't describe yourself in the way that you would introduce yourself at a party, which is here's who I am and what I do. Much better to describe why you get out of bed in the morning.
Exactly.
The difference
exactly.
that you want to make.
Yeah, and you have to have that kind of passion, I think, to make your nonprofit grow. If you don't wake up 5 years after founding your organization with as much enthusiasm as you did the day you created it, something's wrong.
Yes. Absolutely. We've spoken about your mission statement, and if you think about where that word comes from, it's so important for a lot of people. There is a vocational calling to the work they do. They have a mission to fulfill.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't just word games, is it? It's about being authentic to yourself and to the purpose that that your charity or your nonprofit has.
Exactly. And it has to be something that will drive you to get out of bed every morning.
Well, yes, because those challenges are there, aren't they? They're all around us. So the reason for arriving at sustainability as a topic is that, same as you, I'd set up a company, and for the first 2 or 3 years, people didn't frame it in this way, but the request that I got from every single client was, how can we keep ourselves going? And the request from every funder that I worked with was, why do people keep coming back to us for money? And eventually, it took me a while to work out, but I did eventually work out. They were all asking the same question, which is, why is sustainability such a challenge for us? And there are all of those challenges that will, you have to have the energy and the motivation and the momentum to push through them, because it's certainly no easy thing setting up and running a non-profit. You have to have that passion. You can't manage it without it. And as you say, you need the business skills as well. There's a lot to it. And I would like to think that part of what I'm trying to do in my work is to give reassurance to nonprofits and their leaders that, one, that they're not alone, that somebody understands them and their challenges, and that they need to keep going, because increasingly as time goes on, I don't know if I'm just getting older or society is getting stranger, but the more I feel we need nonprofits in our societies for them to be healthy.
Mm-hmm. I think it may be a combination of both. You know, as we age, we maybe see the weirdness of the world through different eyes, or maybe we just wake up to it and realize, yeah, the world is strange. It may have always been strange, but now can't handle it.
Yes. So there's a bit of a mixed message in there, because I've said that nonprofits don't have the right to exist. They, you know, they can't take for granted, and they certainly don't exist for their own sake. But at the same time, my mission is to help them to keep going, to the extent that they are relevant and that leaders are doing a good job. Then I'm here to try and pump up their tires and to give them practical ways. It's one thing to have ideas, but the reason why you recognize all of the challenges that I've been describing in the book and the workbook is they're built from the ground up. They're built from what nonprofits tell me.
Yeah, I can't imagine any other way of building a nonprofit. You know, they just start with an idea of something that's missing in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think, what we all are all trying to do is fill in all of the holes in the Swiss cheese.
Yes. Yeah. And that's an interesting one when it comes to income generation, which is one of the other capabilities in the book, is that people often take the approach of filling a hole. They see a deficit in their budget, or they see the need to raise however many dollars for a campaign or for a resource or a piece of work. But they don't realize that's not a very attractive fundraising ask, is can you help us fill a hole, rather than can you help us bring something into the world? Can you help us achieve a vision?
Right. And that does make a difference in how people perceive what you're asking for.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. Very, very different propositions, aren't they? Do you want to fill a hole or do you want to build something? Very different questions.
Now, in your book, you talk. Go ahead.
I'm going to say, I think it taps into what is the profit in a nonprofit is the passion that you were talking about. Selling passion to the donors and having it yourself.
Mm-hmm. I like that. Yes.
I'm sitting here nodding as if Gene could hear my head going up and down. I must
Me
be
too.
must be time for another cup of tea. Oh, anyway, I was going to ask you, Graham, you have in the book, you mentioned there are five keys to sustainable nonprofits.
Yes.
Could you go over those briefly for us?
Yep. Involvement is the glue that holds it all together, and that will not be a surprise to your nonprofit listeners. We also need to generate income, as we've been talking about, but we need to keep improving and innovating. So that's the third and the fourth. And the final one is measuring impact. We need to make a difference and measure it. So those are the five capabilities of sustainable organizations.
Mm-hmm.
And we can say more about them later on.
Okay, excellent. Now, I just forgot my... I'm telling you, it's time for another cup of tea. Plain and simple. Must be time for some green tea. Now, you help organizations devise long-term strategies and plans for their sustainability. Is this an ongoing thing that you work with nonprofits, or is this something that you can do with just a quick little, here's a layout plan, follow this and go away? How does this work?
That's a good question. My dream would be that it's the latter, that people don't need us, they don't need consultants. The workbook gives the vast majority of nonprofits exactly what they need to make a plan and to work on that, usually for a couple of years. It usually gives them enough meat and activities and clarity to drive them forward for the next couple of years. And the fabulous thing about that is they don't need to come to us, they don't need to pay us anything. It's there as a free resource, hopefully making the world a better place. And then in terms of how we actually make our money and how the business works, yes, it is then involved being involved with organizations who want slightly more intensive support to maybe work out their plan for income generation or for impact measurement, you know, which outcomes to measure, how to do that, which evaluation tools to use, or involvement strategies. And some of our work is broader consultancy that people don't necessarily come to us saying, can you give us the lasting difference? But all of our work, one of the reasons we say yes to things is if we can see sustainability in it and particularly lasting impact. That's what motivates
us. Okay. Makes absolute
sense. Answer the question? Good.
Yes, it does. Now, I know we mentioned this briefly earlier, succession planning. That's not something that you can just say, okay, well, when I decide I want to retire from this, you know, from doing this work, I'm going to name you as my successor. There's much more to that, right?
It's so important to be clear on that when we talk about succession. It's absolutely not identifying your successor, but equipping the diversity of people around you to be able to step in. When we did the research for this, we did a global literature review and we interviewed 70 nonprofit leaders. And what really surprised me was that in every single case, at literally every single case, there was an example of when an organizational leader had become seriously ill in post or had passed away in post. So when it comes to succession planning, it's so important. Number one, it's not about finding your successor. Number two, it's a question of not if, but when it will be needed.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, if it's going to be needed and succession is inevitable, we need to start working now. And another word that might be more comfortable for people is it's capacity building. It's staff empowerment. It's stepping back. It's giving people opportunities to develop, to move into leadership roles, to take decisions, to distribute power and authority in decision making. So yes, it becomes a way of life and a way of thinking as a leader, putting your focus on developing the people around you so that when the time comes that you need to move on, whether planned or unplanned, there's not a void, that the organization isn't solely reliant on one person.
On one person, right.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Like painting a white picket fence.
Go back to that fence.
Mary and I talk fairly often about Mark Twain writing about Tom Sawyer having people paint his white picket fence.
I thought this might be Becky Thatcher coming in here.
exactly. And it's we both had that kind of same idea, but sure, that's how you do it. You know, you show people how much fun it is and teach them how to do it and have them help and then go on and learn more.
Yes, absolutely. And that's I might steal that as well. I like that. The other way to think about it, there's the old cliche of give somebody a fish, they eat for a day, teach them to fish. And that partly answers Mary's previous question about our business and how we work and putting things out there. Because if we know that there's well more than 7,000, but there's at least 7,000 nonprofits who have used the toolkit. If even 1% of them came to my company for support, we would have no capacity to meet that demand. So it has to be a good enough resource, and the book has to be helpful enough. And I'll just explain the difference between them in a moment, but they have to be helpful enough that people can just pick it up, get the bits that they need, like Mary did, read 4 or 5 indicators or provocations that are in there that make them feel uncomfortable, go away and work on those, and that will give you plenty to crack on with. And to explain the distinction, so we made the Lasting Difference Toolkit, or workbook, as you've described it. That's been freely available since 2016, and it's on a Creative Commons license to encourage the free spread of it around the world. But then there's the longer version of it, where the Making a Lasting Difference book is basically the same core content, but it's expanded on. So I explain the thinking behind the indicators and the self-assessment in a lot more depth. So that's the distinction.
And, you know, I was just remembering when I was working on with the toolkit, I call it a workbook. I don't know why.
I think I might prefer that, actually.
I think overall theme that kept coming back was self-care. You know, it is important. People forget, whether you're a leader of a nonprofit or a caregiver or any human being, actually, you need to take care of yourself. And you need to make sure your team takes care of itself. It's about balance, isn't it?
Yes. Yes. And yeah, there's lots you're making me think there, Mary. There's lots in the balance. I'm conscious as well. It's so easy to say, isn't it, that we need to look after ourselves, but it's quite hard to do. And it's quite challenging because we're so used to being altruistic people, giving to and supporting other people, that leaders find it hard to open up and to accept help and to admit frailties. But it's also hard on the day-to-day basis to prioritize self-care, because you could do your job 24 hours a day and it still wouldn't be enough. So why would you prioritize 15 minutes for a walk in the morning or for Pilates or whatever it is that gives you that space to think and to breathe and to be yourself? But it's such an important...
I think, I think I'm really more fortunate than a lot of people because I have a personal Zen master. He happens to have 4 feet and meows a lot. He will come to me throughout the day and remind me, you need to get up, take a walk, get away from this computer. I need food. Or sometimes it's just as simple as, see that couch over there? If you sit there and brush me, I will stop nagging you. And I find him amazing to help me keep my balance.
Is it possible that you're mistaking self-care for pet care?
Whatever.
No, that sounds marvelous. 15 minutes on the couch with your cat, that sounds like brilliant self-care to me. That's fantastic.
It is. It really is. And, you know, there again, we were talking briefly about perspectives. And a lot of it has to do with perspective. You know, I could say, oh, dear, I have to go take care of the cat. Or, oh, gee whiz,
yes.
Why does that cat, why is he so needy? But I decided a long time ago, instead of thinking in terms of I have to do this, I get to do this. This is an opportunity for me. And I just remind myself that I'm very fortunate to be able to take care of a pet. I have a pet that, you know, maybe he is needy, but it also, if I think of him as my Zen master, it turns the focus around. I have a personal Zen master. Who else can say that?
That's fantastic. And that's perspective is so important. Yes, absolutely. And the self-care thing is one that it's a little bit like when we're encouraging and giving organizations permission to say no and to be clear on what their yes is. And it relates very closely to individual self-care as well.
And I think that's why some of the more sustainable nonprofits do team building exercises and have retreats so that they can get their people together and organize and remember why they're doing what they do.
The why is so important. And it's, again, that can be difficult for people taking the time or having the budget to hire a venue or a facilitator or whatever. But I remember years ago, I did a first aid course and the first aid instructor caused a lot of alarm and panic really in the room because they asked the question, you're in a first aid situation, there's you and the casualty, who's the most important person? And of course, the whole room said, well, the casualty is. And the tutor caused consternation by saying, and therefore you are the most important person in the room. And it's taken me about 20 years really to understand that. But for me, that's the self-care message. We can't be present for other people. We can't give ourselves constantly and keep going back to the well and help other people. We will eventually be unsustainable ourselves. We need to top up our own resources from somewhere, whether that's the cat or the garden or whatever, or the Zen master. I think my cat might like to find something tomorrow, treating her in that way.
You know, if you go on any airplane, any flight, the attendants will tell you, in case of an accident and the oxygen mask falls, put it on yourself before you put it on anybody else. Take your own oxygen first. You cannot administer to anybody who's injured if you black out because you're not getting any oxygen.
Absolutely. And that's where, again, part of my original drive to focus on nonprofit sustainability was that there was just nobody else and nothing else that I could see that was helping nonprofits to realize that they needed some time to look after themselves as organizations or as individuals, to take some time to lift the bonnet and to do a bit of maintenance in order that they can then get the car back on the road. Because you see so many people and so many organizations running themselves into the ground. And just the plain English definition of sustainability is being able to replace your resources more quickly than you exhaust them. And how many of us are working beyond exhaustion and working beyond safe capacity?
Yeah.
Exactly. And a lot of that changes depending on the kind of nonprofit that you do. Because, you know, what I do doesn't require a lot of physical exertion, but there are other nonprofits that are actually out there, maybe on the streets, helping homeless people,
sure,
or feeding hungry or you know, working with people in domestic violence situations. And those people I consider a little more important to make sure that they take care of themselves. And in even, I constantly remind my co-founders, we're not in a life or death situation. If something slips with our organization, no one will be hurt. It may be an inconvenience, but we have to remind, and I think even the people who are in those life or death situations also need to remember, yes, it's life or death. Yes, I'm affecting someone's livelihood or their lifestyle. But if I'm staggering from lack of sleep, or I'm not eating well, or I'm not taking the right nutritional supplements or whatever, you can't take care of other people if you're the one falling down.
It's not sustainable.
That's right. And I think maybe the word sustainability has been thrown around and bantered about so many times recently that people forget what it actually means.
Yes. Yeah, that's an interesting one, because we sometimes struggle to put across what it's about, partly because it can be mistaken with environmental sustainability, and there's some really helpful metaphors that come from that. But you've used the word resilience in the title to this podcast, and I think that's the closest simile that we could use, synonym. But for me, sustainability keeps coming back round, because it is the number one concern. Any survey that's done in US, UK, by funders or by intermediary organizations, membership bodies, I don't know if it's just because of my interest and I go looking for it, but it seems to me either they use the word explicitly or it translates as sustainability all the time. Typically financial sustainability, financial resilience, that's usually the way that it that people come at it. And we can maybe say more about that after another cup of green tea, but that's where most people start thinking about it. And then part of my job is to get them to see that, okay, so you're interested in financial resilience, financial sustainability. Where does your money come from? Your money comes from the other four capabilities of involving people, improving the work that you do, innovating new solutions to challenges, and measuring the difference that you make. So yes, it is out there, and it has been bandied around a lot. And we do get questions about, why do we call it this, and is there not a better name for it, or are there not other issues? But I think there's still a lot of work to do before people really understand the core sustainability challenges. And I've started to talk about survival more this year than I used to permit myself to. But I think that is now the darkness for many nonprofits this year with the pandemic, is as stark as survival.
Yes. You know, we could talk about this for another hour or four, but we're at the end of this hour. It's been delightful. I have really learned a lot, and I've enjoyed every minute of it. But we are out of time, gentlemen.
I can't believe I've learned so much, and I'm definitely going to take this back to the people I work with at the other nonprofit that I work with. Because I can see definitely some things we can use from it. Definitely.
Let me know how
and
you get
Gene,
on.
Absolutely. I will give feedback. I will.
Thank you.
Yeah. When you check out the website and check out the resources, you'll be blown away.
I actually been looking at it. I'm totally blown away. I'm excited. I'm so glad to have met you, and especially to be able to take this to the people I work with. So, excellent. Thank you.
And that's you're very welcome. And that's the joy of putting a free resource out there, is people can then share it freely. So please do that and enjoy. So thelastingdifference.com is where people can see that resource and find links to lots and lots of other free and practical ideas. And then for practical but expensive ideas, the book is Making a Lasting Difference. And you should be able to order that in North America from Amazon.com very straightforwardly.
Okay.
So thank you both. And yes, I've made lots of notes here of the things I've been learning from you. It's been really
good.
Enjoyable. A very quick
hour. I know that you're on Twitter. Are you on any other social?
No, as few as possible, as many as necessary. That's my principle. So LinkedIn and Twitter. So at Ren Greyhound or at The Lasting D, you'll find us on Twitter.
Excellent. Okay. Well, thank you. And with that, I will bid you good night. And Jean, I will bid you good afternoon.
See you then.
Thank you both.
All
enjoy.
Right.
Thank you
Bye-bye.
So much.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening this evening. We're happy you chose to spend this time with us, and we hope you learned as much as we did.
Every Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
And if you'd like us to invite you or someone you know to speak right here, just go to beunique.org and contact us there.
I'm still trying to wrap my head around the fact that our newly branded podcast has so many global listeners and that our website and magazine receive thousands of visitors each month. Let's put your brand in front of all those people. Mary can share the demographics with you. Contact her through the website. That's BUNEKE.org.